Why isn't there a second system to play in right now? Why can't you jump between systems? Is because is because
ramps. Why did it have to be ramps?
Oh my god! My god!
Oh, the
well known to open developers.
Wow. Every part of the game is crap. What were you doing?
This game is a broken, buggy,
unplayable mess.
This is bullshit.
Wow.
Listen to the audio.
Submarines cancel. Wow.
Twitch chat is going crazy.
Welcome to our guest, episode 5 of season 3. This is your virtual captain. And I'm sitting here with Bucha and Death Valley. How's it going, guys?
Doing good. I'm glad to be out of the dark place that we went to.
Hey.
I'm still, you know, managing my word.
So, it's been a while since we casted. And for anyone out there who's waiting on MP3s and the feed, those hopefully will be getting to you here this week. Without going into too much details, just the workflow is just restricted a little bit, and I can only work on it at home, and since this doesn't pay anything, it's just slowed down. But hey, I got some free time today, so maybe we'd do it. And so one thing that's happened since our last proper cast is CIG disclosed that they have some external third-party investors, and they did something interesting, something I wasn't expecting. I don't know if you guys were expecting this, but they kind of gave a few different bar graphs of how much money they've spent on different things and how much employees they've had and a few different numbers. They've put some hard numbers on it. I mean, I can't say that they're 100% true, but it's what they're saying. What did you guys think of those? I'm sure you probably spent more time on them than I did. I kind of looked at them and went, ah, this is crazy. Can't believe it. And went on my way. What do you think of them, Bucha?
Well, let's see. So congratulations to CIG for raising $37 million in 2018. Congratulations.
Yeah, this is a point worth mentioning. They like to talk about the $20 million or whatever. But it's more important to look at by year, isn't it?
Yes. So 2018 brought in $37 million from crowdfunding, according to their funding track. So in addition to this, as you stated, new investors have come in. The father-son team of Clive and Keith Calder, Keith being the younger. Now, Clive Calder Clive founded the most successful independent music company, Zumba, which was home to some of the biggest musical acts in the world. And so Clive sold off his company for several billion and now resides in the Cayman Islands. Now, Keith, on the other hand, is an independent film producer whose company, Snoot Entertainments. Most recent films are the critically acclaimed Blind Spotting and the Academy Award nominated Anna Mona Lisa. So, two films that you probably haven't heard of, much like Roberts' producer days, if you cut out Lucky Number 11, The Punisher, and Lord of War. So, movie industry people from Keith, who it is suspected, at least as far as Roberts' accounts of him and Keith talking about their war stories back in the movie business. And of course, that builds a bond to say, hey, you've been through what I've been through. I could use some money. And so we have a $49 million investment from Clive and Keith Calder to CIG that has been disclosed alongside the released financials from 2012 to 2017. Now, the financials released are not itemized and they are not audited. So they are from the perspective of auditor. Oh, where do we see auditor? Audit. Our auditors? Oh. Oh, yes. Our auditors have reviewed these numbers and verified the approach we have taken, tracing the numbers here in our tax returns.
Question mark.
Is it auditors approved? Yes. So basically what we're looking at, if we put aside the investors for a second, because if we're taking a look at what has been brought in and what has been spent. So in the past, I have said that 2014 was probably the last year that CIG had surplus money in excess of 20 million. So CIG was in a comfortable spot at that time. Now, from 2015 on, the amount of free money that was actually, the amount of free money that CIG had to play with actually started going down. So what happened, let's see if I can bring up the right things. So from 2013, cumulative net position, 16.9 million in reserve. 2014, that is not what they had in reserve. That is what, that is their net position. So in 2013, they were 16.9 up as far as money coming in versus money spent. Yep, which meant that the wide expansion, sort of like a Germany, UK, to include the Derby office that's now opening, and wide expansion of the scope of the project. And so basically, they've been spending money hand over fist. And so what we're looking at is, 2017, them ending with $14 million in reserve. And this is kind of counter to the last statement that Roberts made back in 2013, 2014, was that we have enough money in reserve to finish the project. Now, back in 2013, 2014, that was kind of true, or at least that was plausible, that with the 20, especially at the end of 2014, they were at $25 million reserve. They could probably scale down production and start to meet what they could promise and what they needed to cut. However, by the last report at the end of 2017, down to 14 million. And this is after a couple of good years too of crowdfunding income. So we re-enter the new investors who have invested $49 million targeted to marketing. And that is a funny way of saying we have no money to spend anywhere else. So,
Death Valley. Twitch chat, I have myself muted for who knows how long.
So Death Valley, I sort of like you've seen some of these articles as well. Now, what do you think, just based upon the investor and the financials, what do you see?
What I'm seeing right now is that there was $211 million, bank loans, investors, backers, and 2019, and we're still 4 years behind where we were now. That is what I see. The money, there's money missing, or there's money being squandered. There's money that's gone into bank accounts in the Cayman Islands. That's been discussed on other YouTube channels as well. at the end of the day, I don't see fiscal management or correct fiscal management being done by a corporate business. I see very serious filtering of funds elsewhere outside of the actual game proper for Squadron 42 as well as Star Citizen at this stage. I see that Chris Roberts has spent almost $100 million on mocap and tried to rub shoulders, as we just said in the previous episode, in relation to getting back into the movie world. Sadly, I see Freelancer 2.0, I see Wing Commander 4 all over again. And it's been that way for 4 years now. He stopped making the game 4 years ago, guys, and he's gone and then gone and gone back to what he always does. His modus operandum wants to be a movie producer. We have been his personal bank account for that time. And unfortunately, the money you see here, the numbers on this screen, are purely fictitious. The real reappropriation of funds has gone in part to an offline bank account in the Cayman Islands, where he can then just run away and drink his pina coladas with Sandy with. Aaron's probably doing the same thing as well. And I just don't see a very positive financial position of the company at this stage. Yes, the marketing investment, the $46 million 10% sell-off, and the other numbers you've just mentioned, Butcher, they are purely to drive the movie aspect of this game and not development.
I want to be a producer.
For more on that subject, please do check out the wonderful article done by Nick Monroe titled Chris Roberts, The Theory of Everything. Goes into a lot of those topics about this being a complete rerun of Freelancer 2 development cycle. Really incredible article.
So, I mean, I guess one of the things that is talked about with the new investors is, from the skeptic side, is they now have a producer in everything but name, or a publisher in everything but name. And I would say that's not quite true. The new investors are... the Calders are not experts in the distribution of video games on, you know, within stores and whatnot. They may, you know, they may have some idea how to distribute music. They may have some idea how to distribute movies. Video games, not so much. But how hard can it be? Now, I would say what Chris has bought is instead the eye and the critical eye and the oversight of what a publisher would have, with none of the benefits except for the money. So, whereas with a publisher, sort of like with EA, with Activision, with Ubisoft, with Paradox, with THQ Nordic, so those publishers at least have the lines in specifically garnered for video games distribution. And whereas with the Calders, they don't have that. They have the money, but the Calders don't bring much to the table other than the money. But that might just be all Roberts wants. However, it comes with the valuation, which is the other thing that has popped up in these articles that relate to the financials and the investment group coming in, is that the valuation of the Star Citizen project, to include Squadron 42, is valued at just below $500 million. Which sounds wild. It sounds crazy. However, all valuations, as I said before, you know, they're in the eye of the beholder, they're in the eye of the people who values it most. However, it's not as outlandish as you think. And I've had to think about this after a conversation I had with somebody else, was that this is a fairly And this is a fairly conservative valuation. I mean, I don't remember the specific incident where Robert said this, but he was claiming more about this. This could possibly be a $1 or $2 billion project, all said and done, as far as the value of it. Yes, I will probably have to go back and look. I may end up eating my words, but $500 million is a far cry from $2 billion. Quarter.
Could I also just say, you've also got to account for depreciation of assets, and that's what's not been happening. He's working on retail purchase numbers. He's not working on the depreciation of assets or the end of life cycle for equipment, especially all of the hardware they're using. God, that'd be worth next to nothing right now. The bricks and mortar, they're renting. They're not owning. So I think that it's a very lofty exercise of hope and assumption that he's that worth that much, but that comes back to my delusions of grandeur argument. But can I just quickly put a very shameless plug in for another YouTuber, Star Criticism? Star Citizen, A Brief History of Lying. Can we please provide that link into the chat section for the guys? That will ratify everything we're talking about in relation to the
Sure, Gorf is a big friend of the show. We're still trying to get him on the show. He's very shy. Everybody message him telling me, gotta come on the show. We love you, man.
He's busy doing damage control for Fallout 76. I mean, Bethesda is a hard place to work at. This is, of course, referencing the Goon Hive theory that Gorf is, in fact, Pete Hines.
Okay. Uh-huh. I'm not familiar with all these rumors. And need I remind you, no doxing on this show.
Oh, dang it.
Let us behave.
So I guess, like, it is full of dreams and whatnot, but I think the one thing that this valuation also forgets is the massive buy-in that has already happened, because much of the people who have pledged to Star Citizen already own Star Citizen, and they also already own Squadron 42 for the most part. I would probably guess at this point, because of the separation between Star Citizen and Squadron 42, you know, the two products separating, I would probably say that at least half of the people that have pledged, if we are to take the total amount of citizens, the citizen counter, to heart, I would probably say that at least half of the backers have access to Squadron 42. And we're, what, at 2 million... 2 million citizens, I think, just a little bit over that.
Random.
Let's see. What are we at? Okay, the anniversary
is 2,000,072.
2,200,000. So if we were to take that to heart. Now, what I have discussed in the past, like in previous Suncast Galaxy, is that it is more possible, thanks to interviews with Turbulent that said, we have 100 accounts, but only half of them are paying accounts. Some of them are just some of the forum accounts are just free accounts that people bought in just to talk on the forums, because, you know, this is the internet. If you can talk someplace for free, you may as well do it. So in that case, you have, I would probably say, if it's 1 million people that have bought in, then that percentage is probably closer to 75% people who already own both Squadron 42 and Star Citizen. And then you have a couple latecomers that just said, oh, this is a pretty ship. I'm going to buy into Squadron 42 because, you know, fuck the single player thing. You know, that's boring. I want to play in this MMO universe that everybody says is cool and good. So in this case, it's like, I think they are underestimating... They are underestimating how much valuation has already been eaten by the fact that people have already bought into this.
I believe that your numbers are quite correct in relation to the amount of active accounts with ships actually in them. Squadron 42, I think, might be about 65% ownership across the actual community, because as we all know, we bought Star Citizen. We didn't buy Squadron 42. That came in for us late backers, early, should I say, backers, after the conception of Star Citizen. So, yeah, and a lot of people have been chatting off, especially in Reddit and other forums, saying, should I actually get Squadron 42 at this stage or just hold out? And I say to people, look, if you're going to buy into Star Citizen, buy the full experience. Buy both at the same time. Get yourself an Aurora or a Mustang. I do say Mustang is a far better ship each time, or it's a glass cannon, yada, yada, yada. Mm-hmm. But I do say get both at the same time, because at some stage in the future, that's going to go retail, and that's going to be an X amount of dollar product plus the product, plus the ship you've got to buy for SC. So buy now while you come in low, and you know, get a return on investment later. And I look back at that now and just think, what an idiot I've been. I'm actually helping marketing the product that's not there. But anyway, financially though, yeah, there's money coming in, and Chris doesn't want overheads from people. We're all too far down the rabbit hole. He certainly is as well. His ambition has changed, and we're at where we're at. The valuation, I personally believe, from someone a little bit more skeptical, his personal evaluation's all well and good, $500 million. I would say it's maybe close to about $300 million, including depreciating assets, as well as value return assets, as well as any other IP that carries over as well. And I think that he's wildly overvalued his IP and what they've done with Lumberyard, because you can't make statement to Cryengine anymore after all the debacles there. And Lumberyard itself is still in beta, I think, as an engine. Is that correct?
Lumberyard...
Well, here's what I'll say. There's no released games on Lumberyard right now.
Actually, that is wrong.
Thank you.
So this is actually, you know, okay, I'm going to say this is something that Derek Smart actually said as we were talking, was that, you know, Lumberyard hasn't released a game. Apparently, there is two released games on Lumberyard. One is a coffee-themed fighting game. And like the other...
And coffee.
So that is the one game that is actually launched. There is another game that is coming out fairly soon. That is the Grand Tour Racing game.
Ah, okay. Well, that's a soon TM.
That is a very soon TM thing.
Okay, well.
They have already started advertising.
I recuse myself of any inaccuracies I just stated, because Wikipedia is not up to date.
Boo this man.
You really Wikipedia? Oh my god.
So as far as like as far as what Lumberyard is it beta? It's not beta. It is a product that is being sold off to sold off to other development houses as a potential engine. But it's sort of like kind of the difference between, I guess, sort of like the semantics between a beta engine and a full release engine is honestly based around the support that it actually has from the developers. So Amazon has actually put together a support team for the engine, whereas sort of like back in 2012 when Unity was first coming out, Unity was being used, yes, but the support team behind it wasn't as robust as, say, Epic's Unreal Engine. Or
so the whole thing with Amazon Lumberyard, from what I found out in a very recent conversation with a fellow backer, is that it can handle much larger world spaces than Engine, Unity, or Frostbite. So that would mean that Lumberyard is a prerequisite necessity for Star Citizen's achievement. For the simple fact is, no other game engine handles such a large map space with ease.
64-bit.
Easy transferability between the tiles of the maps. Now, I'm not a game developer. I am not an engine developer. I have no idea what I'm talking about when it comes to that. But I was talking to somebody who does do that for a job, and they said Lumberyard is the logical choice because of the way it's designed.
Now, I want to say this is true. CryEngine is very good at rendering large landscapes. Now, I mean, like, now, the problem becomes you can load up a large landscape, but what happens when you have to load up another large landscape? And this is the problem that CryEngine runs into, because I would say that I myself am not a programmer, coder, or any way an expert in CryEngine, but I have talked to a lot of people that are. And what they have told me is that CryEngine is very inefficient and very bad at unloading assets and streaming assets, is the terminology. And so, like, Unreal Engine is a lot better at streaming assets. Sort of like the idea being between, in today's sort of like game design theory, or at least within the last 10 years, was that, you know, you went into this large play space, you did it, you know, the scenery was loaded, the landscape was loaded, and then you go into a small enclosed room where you are trapped in here, plot exposition. And during that plot exposition, as you are trapped in this small little box and can't see outside, the previous map was unloaded, and the next map is being loaded at the same time. That is what streaming content is. Now, CryEngine is not very good at unloading assets that have already been loaded. And so, because you don't want a, you know, paused loading screen, you want continuous action. So that's when streaming content comes in. So you have, in CryEngine, old content fighting to get out and new content fighting to get in. And that can often cause the engine to crash, or at least for assets to not be loaded as you walk out into the new landscape. That causes a lot of problems.
Yes, but what's called object container streaming.
Object container streaming doesn't really have much to do with this. Object container streaming has to do with assets being loaded into the landscape. Sort of like a, you know, crate goes here, crate goes there, barrel goes there. It doesn't really have much to do with the actual landscape. Now,
I thought it was something to do with population of the scene and the polygon and textures and blah, 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 and it overloads the engine because it can't process it all simultaneously.
But so, I have done a little bit of, you know, most engines kind of have this concept of a map or, you know, the level. So it's treated slightly differently than, you know, characters on the screen or trees and assets.
Yeah.
But anyways.
Assets, entities, and interactable objects, physics objects. So the landscape itself. Now, the argument is, well, it's empty space. You don't need to render anything. That's actually false because the engine still renders and tracks the space. Now, the load in, say, like empty space, you may not be waiting so long for entities, assets, and physics objects being placed, but the engine still has to render out empty space. And
that's what I was trying to get at. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So, and you're going to have this massive space, you know, systems and whatnot. And here's an interesting question to ask is, for all the 64-bit precision stuff and for all the OCS stuff that they claim has made, you know, server meshing and all these buzzwords, why isn't there a second system to play in right now? Why can't you jump between systems? Is because jumping from system to system is loading an entirely different map.
The thing
and
is,
they are not ready for this.
Well, it's not even that they can make all 100 systems straight away, no troubles, populate it with, you know, progressive scanning and all that type of crap that they're talking about. What it is the servers themselves. They have not spent the money and on the infrastructure itself. This is why actually Star Citizen is where it's at also. They do not and have not had the expertise involved through contractors or through quotes to actually correctly set up their back end.
Oh yeah.
And this is the whole problem, is the incompetency of management. They do not have the skill set. They're not IT people, and they're not willing to bring in IT people who are subject matter specialists, because then it takes away from their position and title. This is the whole bloody problem. We should already have, as you've brought this up, Boocher, we should already have this bloody game. At least two or three star systems at this stage, with further patches and updates, adding. Yeah. And then stuff the PTU, just put it out to beta, chuck in some systems, work out the server meshing issues, because that's a big issue. OCS is just that band-aid patch to bring it up to minimum standards. Try it out and just do it. Stop trying to perfect it, Chris, and actually do something with it and get the people in that know more than you about this specific subject matter. Get them to tell you how much it's going to cost. Get slapped in the face with the bill, pay it, and get the bloody game out.
So I'm going to actually argue that they are doing back-end server work. However, this is with a caveat. They are doing back-end server work within the scope of what they can currently provide has a limit. Now, sure.
I mean, we saw a few improvements to the player count. There's a lot of flags waving when they got 50 players on one server in one area. Moving, not doing anything, just standing still and saluting.
not exploding.
Right. The thing, right, Boocher, is why haven't they invested heavily in their infrastructure? God, if I'm going to give another horrible...
I think it's more of a case of, like, they have run into the limits of what CryEngine can do. And here's the thing about sort of like the server infrastructure, is sort of like, everybody assumes that the magical bullet is going to be the AWS, Amazon Web Servers. And you're sort of like, that's going to be the magic bullet that's going to solve all the loading, the latency issues, all the streaming issues, game content streaming issues. And no, that doesn't solve anything. You can have a very powerful computer and you can run a badly programmed executable and it will still crash your computer.
Yeah, chug like a dog. But what I'm saying is, from an infrastructure level, they still haven't even put that ground infrastructure in. Chris was talking about 1,000 people on one server at a time. One thing that did get brought up in my video was did he? Typical.
Well,
empty promises.
Yeah, he did disavow 1,000 players in one area. But yeah, your point 500? Goes on. Go ahead.
Right. So let's say 500 people. The thing is, you can't trust cloud. You can't trust someone else's infrastructure. You've got to invest that money yourself. Now, what Star Citizen is trying to achieve is basically a cloud-based server setup where it's a mile straight and half a mile wide of servers running its own cloud bank. And that's the money that should have been thrown at that already and already copyrighted and proprietary made setup and in a very, very secure location, and have that in Australia, have that in America, have that all around Europe, because Europe's massive, have one in the UK as well, so you have minimum, as you said, Boocher, low latency, and you are getting it from the source in the shortest period, shortest distance possible in real time. This is a game that massively requires almost zero ping to be a competitive and immersive, as Chris keeps saying, game. Without this infrastructural investment, this game is never going to come out be what we want.
Well, I would argue that it's the latency is only part of the problem. I mean, sort of like you say, what they should have done is laid the groundwork. However, the problem is, it's like the Monty Python joke. You're building in a swamp. You know, the first castle, it fell over and sank in the swamp. The second castle fell over, sank in the swamp. And we're on the third castle right now that burns down, falls over, and then sinks into the swamp.
Yeah, and Australia is the swamp. Because the internet we have here is the shittest in the world. Oh,
I mean, I guess to be more specific. Again, we're talking about the engine itself. I mean, you can run Diablo 2 servers on AWS things, and you're going to be perfect, fine. And you can run. I mean, I think you could possibly run EVE Online, but you're going to have to modify an AWS server massively in order to keep a single shard going.
Correct. Yeah.
You could do Fortnite on AWS servers. In fact, they do.
You know, the term I come back to a lot of times is architecture. It's like, yeah, you can run any EXE file on an AWS server, but is your architecture designed in such a way to support these type of connections or these amount of connections?
Yeah, no.
And what we're seeing with Star Citizen is, you can cut corners and you can get it up to 50, but are you going to get it up to 100? No. Are you going to get it up to 500? Hell no.
Right. And that's our argument.
Yes, and that is the problem with the CryEngine executable. And be it Lumberyard, or in the case that very recently they were probably still working on CryEngine itself, not so much Lumberyard. More on that. Probably on a different episode, and also probably on a different chapter of Sunkost Galaxy. Yeah, can't spoil it. But in any case, or the very specifics is that the engine itself has its limitations of what it can do, and even communicating that at a high speed, you're still going to have an engine that is struggling to render it itself. Much less from what you're doing, but also rendering what the heck is going on with another person, because it's struggling to, like, even with the floating point precision, you can still get different values. And then I lost the train of thought. The idea being that when your precision starts to go haywire, your models and your assets and your entities start fighting for what the real valuation is in real time. And this is a big problem with CryEngine's physics engine. Go ahead.
Sorry.
Go ahead.
I've got a question for you then. Why do we have the client and user terminal side instead of just cloud side, and we just log in from the terminal? Wouldn't that massively reduce latency, load, loading times, at ping, and the ping would be purely detrimentally based on your own internet connection at home, hence why the cloud server farms would be the most logical infrastructural improvement to this whole project, just to begin with, let alone any of the major issues. Wouldn't have to roll out 30 gig, 40 gig, 50 gig patches anymore, because it'll all be on their server side. One person in one office at one time of the day and anywhere in the world can just do some debugging and fix it and have the game back up within an hour. World of Warcraft did that on a weekly, right, with their servers, maintenance, they called it. It was called debugging, and they did it all server side. They did not do it client side. The client side had a very small download compared to, you know, how much was actually server side. Why isn't Chris following the norms?
Because hold on to your belts. Because CryEngine, at its core, it is programmed at its very core, is client side authoritative.
It's true, in my limited experience.
So this means, for those that don't understand what client-side authoritative is, what it means is that the client, the player playing the game, the machine running the executable, running it from the player, is the authority on what happens in the game on the client side, which then transmits to the server. And all the server does is dole out the information that it
now,
is given.
Now,
by
as a quick test for the anyone who wants to go out and test this, some people are testing with sniper rifles. If you go outside of a certain range, the client doesn't send any message about, you know, shooting that bullet. That bullet never hits you on the client, so you stay alive on the client and the server.
And this is also why there is a massive problem with the aimbotting in Star Marine.
Mm-hmm.
Because that CryEngine is, and Lumberyard by extension, is so client authoritative that the servers don't have any idea of bad information.
Who should be getting what? They just kind of send everything.
Yeah, who should be getting what? It just sort of is like, okay, this is your result. Okay, I'll throw it out. It does not have a good system of questioning. This is suspect. And they're like, server authoritative is where the client sends data of what should be going on, and the server runs through a set of parameters and calculations that say that makes sense. It's sort of like, for example, I believe it, Team Fortress or Counter-Strike had like a pretty good example of this, was that that when a player pushes forward, you know, it sends the data that I am moving forward, and the server says, okay, you should be moving forward at about this much. And then the player says, I have stopped moving forward. And then the server says, okay, you should be stopping at about this much. Whereas with a client-side authoritative, the client says, I am moving at this much. And then the server says, okay. So that is the big problem with CryEngine, is that it's client-side authoritative.
That brings me back to the question, why not Unreal Engine 4? Why not Unity? They're both also beautiful engines, even more so than CryEngine,
now
in their own respective rights.
Because I had a cost fallacy. We've bought into this engine, and we're going to make it work. By God, we're going to make it work.
And it's not.
and also, there's... So the idea behind, you know, why not Unity, why not Unreal, why not even wait for CryEngine 5 to come in, which had a couple of improvements. Note, the CryEngine 5 improvements are not backwards compatible with the CryEngine 4 branch, which is what Lumberyard and StarEngine are working on. So those improvements are not backwards compatible. Those are exclusive to the new CryEngine build.
Why else would you
have it from a marketing and license distributing? Yeah, yeah. Why would you want to make that backwards compatible when you say why use this old version when you can get the new version?
So yeah, it's proprietize. That's such a bastard of a word to say. The CryEngine in its new, upgraded version 2.0.
Yes.
Freelancer 2.0. Just saying. Just a quick little stab there. So basically, okay. So Chris is trying to make his own engine based on someone else's engine, just like everything else he's done, is take from everywhere else and not be original about anything, and trying to make something work when it's not going to work. But if you lead a horse to water, can't make it drink, right? If a horse doesn't drink that water and dies at the water's edge, do you get a hose and stick water down its throat to wake it up? No, you just accept the horse is dead and you move on. This is the sunk cost fallacy, as you said. It is stupidity at the highest and also criminally, financially criminal level.
I'm going to argue against the stupidity. I'll tell you why. Because at the time of 2012, Unreal 4 engine was not ready for licensing outside of Epic. And Unity did not have the support, did not have the engine support infrastructure for developers that have used Unity enough to understand how to make complex changes to the engine.
Right. Okay.
So you either had the options of in that case was CryEngine 3. Sorry, I think I skipped the generation. CryEngine 4 is the new generation right now. Yeah. CryEngine 3 is what the what number you're
at. I thought it was 5 as well, but go ahead. Okay. Yeah, there's a question in Twitch chat that was confusing me, and that makes a little more sense.
Okay. So you had the option of either building your own engine from scratch or going with CryEngine 3. And in the case of the early days, Roberts went to CryEngine and they sold him on it. Sean Tracy sold Chris Roberts on CryEngine and said, can it do this? And Sean Tracy just said, yes, it can do this. And we're going to show you how we can do this. And they built him a demo. That is what you saw in 2012 was the CryEngine built demo.
All I can say is what Virgil did, ha 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 ha, because it was only a demo. It's a tech demo, and that's what
Sean Tracy's still working there. I watched him for practically an hour today on ATV.
Right.
Yeah, Sean Tracy, I'm going to give him credit. He knows how to sell a product.
Yeah, he knows how to sell himself to Chris, at least. I mean, he's not selling
certainly
me.
Certainly that, too, yes.
Michael salesman, all.
But it is a case of, CryEngine put together the tech demo to show off to Chris Roberts, and Chris Roberts was blown away. This is great. This is better than I expected. CryEngine is going to be the vehicle for the next big thing in PC gaming. And by the way, would you and you and you and you like to work?
Yeah, because I can't do it myself because I got no idea of how to do it.
Exactly.
It's the blind leading the blind and the incompetent leading the even more incompetent. Guys, how about we move on to something a bit more exciting and positive, as we were trying to do in this episode. How about we talk about the ship?
The ships. Oh, okay, so in 2018, there were 20 ships sold and, 10 new ships, so to speak, but 20 in total. And, let's take a moment to talk about the ships that we would buy for the stupidest reasons. And I will let you take it away, Death Valley, first.
You're going to do that to me. Okay, the Kraken. Everyone wants a pirate-inspired aircraft carrier, right? No, mm-hmm. They don't. They want actually an aircraft carrier that actually carries 30 ships, not like 5. But anyway, I would on a whim buy the Kraken because it looks awesome. It sounds cool because it's called the Kraken. Release the Kraken.
Sure.
I would, be absolutely insane and spend that much money on it, whatever the end valuation was, I'm not sure. But I'd buy the Kraken simply on the fact that it would be a great border patrol ship, as it would allow me in each different sector of every different solar system I'm in to have at least a base station where repair ships could be hanging by, crucibles, as well as any other capital ships, any mercy ships, anything like that. So that way it would be a good moving base of operations, which is quite maneuverable compared to a Javelin.
You're saying you did buy it or you would buy it? I'm confused here.
Let's just say that we bought it. We're crazy like that.
Okay, so right.
It's good again.
I bought 16 of them. I would buy it if I was still as caught up in the hype as I was, not any longer. Look, if a miracle happens and this whole project takes a massive leap forward, I'm going to go back into the buying cycle and be a complete moron. I promise you. And I will buy at least 2 Krakens. So that's how it's going to be, right? Why? Because, I need a Kraken at my base of operations on our home planet, as well as a orbital defense ship as well. Then the second Kraken for sector patrol in the sector as well. So then I've got immediate strike craft of at least 10 strike craft of my elite players in my org to actually go out there and obviously provide immediate support instead of delayed 3
a really
hours
quick question.
Traveling through space support.
Really quick question. In between those 2 Krakens, you put peanut butter or cheese?
Oh, yum. Yeah, and it has to be on rye. The Krakens are rye. Yeah, because, healthy and all that shit. I mean, I swore again. How rude of me. Yeah, so I'd buy the Kraken, two Krakens, just for the simple fact is they look cool. Secondly, they are actually effective in quick response.
Well, they are effective. They don't exist yet. Yeah, I got to reel you in here, the dude.
Yeah, you
got,
the video.
You gone straight from criticizing Chris to Dreamland. It's a little bit too much. Of, there we go. That was the word I was searching for. Is, what's that? Yeah, what's that stuff you guys got in Australia?
Poison everywhere.
air. Pollution. No, there's a lot of pollution in it.
That sandwich spread. What's that stuff?
Vegemite.
I got the word right here. I can't read it. Thank you, Twitch chat.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, so the Krakens, I'd buy two Krakens because they're real and they do exist in my mind. And in my lunchbox.
Okay, thank you.
Yes, okay, right. And I'd also go the Pioneer. But for the Pioneer, I have a very specific use case. Did you want to hear about it?
Well, I would buy the Pioneer if it was $5 and I could play Minecraft.
So I want to hear your deepest, darkest, most fidelitous fan fiction of the Pioneer usage.
Okay, so as my organization is a planet side based organization, we're not just a fly around on capital ships and mobile in that respect. We actually do have a role play element. The Pioneer would be absolutely potentially the most important cornerstone of our complete and utter operation, because we need a planet side based operation to run our operations from, dictate to our fleets planet side perspective of where to go, what to do today, what the runs are, which sectors we're patrolling, which cargo runs we're protecting, so on and so forth. At the same time, is people wanting to role play. There's going to be people wanting to be farming. There's going to be people wanting to do prospecting, as well as obviously smuggling and all that other stuff. And we can't move that stuff just through all the major hubs through the UAE area, hence why we do the outer rim work. We don't go inside the area of influence in the good side of things with the UAE. We stay on the outside. We go to Banu space and, you know, we've got to hide stuff. So the Pioneer would be the perfect location in where we could actually dig a hole, right? Mining, dig a hole and could dig it deeper and then deeper and then get it right in there. Sorry, that's bad. But basically get into these underground caches and put this stuff near our Pioneer base where we have ground and air support to protect them. Pretty good argument, isn't it?
Shit, I'll take three.
Yay, I'm Chris Roberts.
I'll replace Chris for a day or two. Should have me set for life.
He just gives me the bank account, and I'll just do it. $8 per ticket.
All right. So for my ship of 2018, the one I would buy for the dumbest reason is the Crusader Hercules. And this has a special place in my heart because it is the most low effort like a fantasy imagination thing available. Now, for those of you that don't know anything about the American military, just a quick brief. There is an airplane called the C-130 Hercules, and it is one of the Air Force and Army's go-to ships for transportation of troops and equipment. And in a previous life, I was a paratrooper that jumped out of these. Now, the full name of the Hercules is the Crusader Hercules Starlifter. And the Starlifter is also another type the C-17, I believe, off the top of my head. The Starlifter is also another airplane that meant for large transportation and personnel carrying. Now, for me as a paratrooper, I jumped out of these things, perfectly good airplanes. So you look at this thing and sort of like,
badass.
This was a long time ago, and so this isn't so much me thumping my chest as I'm, you know, big hardcore guy. This is me sort of like saying, holy Jesus, do I really want to be remembered of the dumb things I did in the military? And apparently, yes, I do, because I'm going to buy a Crusader Hercules Starlifter that, that also there's a variant that turns it into the gunship, the gunship variant of the Hercules that has like a giant fuck off cannon and on the side that, you know, that pours out death from above. And of course, you know, why have a personnel character and carriers? Why not have a bombing variant? So another variant of this is, oh, you can drive those giant, you know, like fuel bombs that they were talking about early on, on their little theory crafting stuff, is, oh, we can fly over these pioneer made bases and drop all these giant bombs on them, and it'll do something, because I don't know, maybe they have LTI and it won't cost them anything. But the idea is solid, of course. Yes. So, and so, like, again, it's just the case of the Hercules Starlifter, the military version of this. And I'm just looking at it as like, wow, I really thought I left that life behind. And now it's pulling me back in.
It's funny, when I was part of ADI, Atlas Defense Industries, JC touted that he was a hotshot fighter pilot in the real world, and you know, he did the Vietnam War and shot down MiGs and all this crap. In the end, I found out he actually flew C-130s. That's all he flew. But the thing is, nothing about this game is reality, far enough away from reality in that respect. Everything is borrowed, something borrowed, something blue. It's like we're getting married to Chris Roberts. He's borrowing everything, and there's nothing new, and that's what's missing. It's like the marriage between Chris Roberts and us as the backer community. There's nothing new, Chris. Make something new, and then we can get married as a big community and sing Kumbaya around the campfire.
Yeah, I mean, it is one of the most low-effort references to actual material. I mean, like, I knew Roberts had a hard-on for, you know, like the World War II setting and sort of like the military grognard of sort of like military tech. It's just, I never expected it to be this so on the nose. I mean, something like this, it's just like, has he run out of ideas, or is it a case of he just needs something right now to sell?
That's exactly what it is, an impulse sale of something. Oh, we'll just call it that and it'll do this, and yeah, just chuck that in. We need to make some money. Chris Roberts never runs out of ideas, ever runs out of.
Or he never runs out of ideas to make references to other things. Never runs out of references.
Can I actually, in relation to that reference thing specifically, hand movements. I've never seen someone move their hands around so much in my life in any respect of the word. And it's explained, I think, by you, Butcher, as well, in relation to his lack of communicating a concept, an idea, a meaning, a purpose, and the hands end up turning into some kind of messy, lost reference to something that he was talking about 5 minutes earlier.
Gesticulation.
Well,
right.
Yeah, I mean, over on Something Awful, we had a hard time understanding the hand wavium, as we call it. And Bucha, right. Well done on explaining the meaning and
I mean, reasoning behind that. Yeah. So, you know, here's a small explanation on it specifically. So, gesticulation in of itself is more of an involuntary control. So, like, for example, right now I'm talking to you and, you know, I sort of have my hand slightly gripped towards me and I'm kind of rotating them around in the sense that my brain is telling me, get to the point, get to the point, get to the point. That is sort of like visual cues for myself. Or, you know, I move a hand out towards you, sort of the theoretical you. This is me sort of offering the idea. So that is gesticulation. What Roberts does is far beyond sort of simple gesticulation. It, be- it becomes him hand painting a picture in the air with no paint. And I mean, sort of like, you know, we love the ones that sort of like, we love the clips of him, you know, moving his arms around like an airplane, sort of like having a little dog fight in his hand. I mean, like that kind of stuff you can see. But then when he talks about more abstract concepts, sort of like, how the server communicates or how your character is going to interact with other people. And then what happens is that he reaches towards a completely different idea and tries to bring it into a conversation with his hands. And he tries to mesh that with the current conversation that wasn't well defined by his first hand motion. And then it just becomes a finger painted clash of, first and second grader stuff. I mean, not to harp on first and second graders. They sometimes make some pretty art. You know,
so, I do.
For the most part, it's crap, but sometimes it's pretty good.
You know what? People sell that crap for millions of dollars when they grow up. Yeah, they call it modern.
They call it modern art. And everybody has their tastes in art.
Indeed. And those people that I believe do not have any taste or are blind. Anyway, moving right along. I don't understand the whole situation in relation to Chris not just sitting down and typing things into a keyboard and giving it to people on paper.
I mean, it's kind of why Roberts didn't do this better. I mean, it is a fair argument to say, well, you do better kind of thing. I mean, like, at a certain point, it's like,
okay,
the criticism of Roberts, the response to that tends to boil down to, well, he did it and he's doing it and he's doing it as best as he can.
I'm not trying to aim that at him. I'm trying to aim it at his competency. And this is what I've been saying in all my videos. It's about corporate competency. He has a serious lack of competency as a leader specifically. He's awesome creator, awesome tech code monkey, as you call him. He's a wonderful personality who is very likable and is very, very much a master manipulator, a true marketing professional elite. But he does not have the leadership skills, the corporate confidence or skill set or qualifications to lead and run a business effectively. He does not have the analytical skills in which to put things on paper and clearly demonstrate a requirement of need, as he is the CEO. CEOs do not operate within the operational side of the business. We know this. They put it on paper or get the executive team to put it on paper to then give a tactical plan of directive to the operational team, who then an action out on a 12-monthly basis the operational plan, correct? Which means deadlines and outcomes have to be achieved by this certain amount of time because we've got a budget to work with. And if we exceed that budget or overrun that budget, we have to look for finances elsewhere within a reasonable amount of set asset cost to the actual cost of the actual end product.
Or we need to make cuts.
Yes, and get rid of three of your bloody officers that you don't need.
Or get rid of those three guys because I don't like them.
With that, let's wrap this episode up. I am your virtual captain. Chris, my offer on that blood is still good. Let's start selling that stuff. I am your virtual captain. I'll see you around, commandos.
I'm Citizen Tech Talk. Stay with the truth.
And I'm Butcher, and I want to be a producer.
We'll see you on the next one, guys. Stick around. We're going to discuss when the next show is at.